Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Catastrophic Attraction by Eve Langlais, narrated by Heather Costa. Prologue. For every government that rises, one falls by the wayside. There were many abandoned places scattered about New Earth, a few from the time when ancient humans, numbering in the impossible billions, ruled the world. Those relics of another era gave glimpses of an opulent, less dangerous life. A past long gone. Since the fall, New Earth was all about survival, and many failed in the harsh climate that emerged. Those that lived to count gray hairs had learned many valuable lessons. Never lower your guard. Never forget. And another thing they learned young, recycle. Given the difficulties in building and the rarity of safe spots, new cities were often built with the stone of the old, meshed into a motley pattern held together with rebar and concrete. When complete, some covered their constructions in domes built to withstand even the harshest storms. Although that kind of fierce, destructive weather happened more rarely outside the barren areas. In these modern times, more than a few places allowed humans to survive outside a dome-controlled area. People could make anything into a home. The transient opted for collapsible tents. Those tending gardens learned to mortar stone for a more solid structure. Others, without a steady supply of rocks, got innovative. Mud mixed with foliage to provide stability for mud huts, treehouses created by branches woven in a pattern, old dwellings repurposed, and there were those who even lived on the deadly waters and iron beasts. But that was now. To understand how humanity returned to surface living, you had to rewind a little to the dark years, when the winds ravaged the surface and humanity went underground into caves and bunkers. In those burrows, a new type of society emerged. A stricter society, because, after the fall, humanity imploded. Violence erupted. Suicide, too. Desperation bred horrible acts. It also forged certain individuals, made some into leaders whose sole focus was survival. Harsh times called for harsh measures. From it was born the Enclave, and under their rule, humanity thrived underground. When they emerged onto the surface, decades after they first went under, it was to find a new reality. Toxic air and dirt, beasts changed by the radiation and harshness of the climate, and survivors who bore little resemblance to the humans underground. The Enclave's tight fist on its citizens only tightened. Fast forward through some lean years of building and learning to live with the land, and fiefdoms began to appear all over, even with its own set of rules. When those fiefdoms collaborated, like the many kingdoms on the continent known as Oz, or in the case of those ruled by the Enclave, a situation arose ripe for the abuse of power. Quite literally, it turned out the Enclave wasn't just the strongest of the humans, or the bossiest. They were those exhibiting the strongest psionic powers, a result of human evolution and a deviancy in their genes. These Enclave elite were chosen because of their ability to do mental tricks, kinetics, even manipulation of the elements. Worthiness had to be proven to join the Enclave ranks. Children were tested at birth, and then again for the first few years of their life. Those with the strongest talents were given to Enclave families to be raised. The rest went to academies, where they were sorted into careers, depending on what the kingdom needed. Leading each domain on the divided continent of Oz, a queen or king, with a full court that ranged in rank. There was no leader over the Enclave. Each kingdom ruled itself, and the only contact between them was for trade. They had no need of alliance. Power decided rank. Ordinary citizens, those who didn't show a psionic ability, and didn't display signs of the deviant gene, obeyed the Enclave. At least, they did if they wanted to remain safe and coddled in a dome or behind protected walls. The Enclave citizens were taught from birth that everything on the outside could kill them, even the very air. But not everyone believed that. Political dissent emerged from those who questioned the status quo. In the Emerald Kingdom, the Wasteland Rats, also known as those damned raiding bastards, weren't willing to live by Enclave laws. On the contrary, they wanted to bring the Enclave down. Yet when the queen died, there was a fight over who would rule the wastelands. And they still weren't safe. They needed a home, a place they could live free. Emerald wasn't the only domain to struggle. In the Sapphire Kingdom, tired of the oppression, a man who could have been a highly ranked enclave member emerged from the squalor of the marshes. A nobody. A water rat who decided he wouldn't allow someone else to tell him what to do. And as he fought back against a system that treated people like vermin, he found himself an unlikely leader. Then a ruler. It was only a small step after that to declare himself king. Chapter 1. The nudge of a cold nose woke him.
"Sachi," he grumbled, turning away from the cat.
His feline had no concept of boundaries, or time. If she wanted a scratch, it happened now. Forget the fact Rourke might be sleeping. If Sachi decided her ears required a good scrub, she had no problem waking him up. As a matter of fact, the first time he met her, she'd burrowed her way under his blanket in the marsh and almost got stabbed for it. Imagine his surprise to find a kitten snuggled close. She'd seemed so sweet and innocent with her big eyes. As she grew into a sleek feline, she also turned out to be bossy. The odd thing was she didn't keep nudging at him. Usually Sachi kept poking at Rourke until he yelled or scratched her damned belly. Not this time. With his attention on her, she walked away, jumping lightly from the bed to the floor. He might have fallen back asleep, except for one thing. The pure silence. A home was never completely quiet. A castle even less so. Rourke waited in his bed, listening for any kind of sound. The usual hum of the electricity running through the batteries of the various appliances in his room was missing. Not uncommon at night, when items were shut down to preserve power sources. But on top of the quiet of the machines, there was an absence of people. No shuffling of the guards in the halls, who insisted on standing watch outside his door. It could be they slept. Could be they were being super quiet. Not likely. Men in armor tended to creak. Since he didn't sense anyone in his room, he got to his feet and padded across the floor, noticing the heaviness in the air, the thickness of it stifling and dulling his senses. He reached the door and paused for a listen. Not even a huff of breath or a gentle snore. He eased it open and peered outside. The guards watching his room were slumped to the floor, chins slack, drooling away as they slept. Their captain would take issue, even though he'd wagered they didn't sleep naturally. He eyed the stairs that wound one floor higher in the tower and cast out his senses, only to run into that thick cloak of silence. The mere fact it existed meant he had to check. He didn't bother putting on shoes or even a shirt. Nor did he grab a weapon. He had no need of one. He mounted the steps quickly, and the moment he made the final turn, his gaze settled on the door. Flanking it, two more sleeping guards. The portal was slightly open, which shouldn't be the case. Not this time of night. Not that room. Panic clutched him, and he ran, his feet slapping the floor. He managed to deflect the sound, lest he give warning. The unnatural state of the guards became glaringly obvious, as they didn't move, despite the fact he toppled one in passing. He reached the doorway, knowing his advisors would yell at him for not requesting assistance. But he wasn't a king who relied on others to act for him. He also wasn't a coward. He took a breath and charged in. Rourke halted so abruptly he almost teetered. He froze at the sight of the stranger cradling a sleeping daughter in their arms. Oh, like fuck, the room filled with an ominous shadow that pushed against the miasma that demanded he sleep. That kind of mind trick didn't work on him.
"Put her down," he said with deadly softness.
The kidnapper, a faceless, sexless thing, turned a masked gaze toward him. They clutched Charlotte tighter, obviously not intending to comply.
"You really don't want to fuck with me."
Smart people usually listened when he threatened. Couldn't the kidnappers sense the menace surrounding them? He couldn't tell what they were thinking, given their eyes remained hidden behind goggles. It didn't matter what kind of armor they wore, or the kind of lulling ability they wielded. They left their mind wide open. He seized it. Rourke didn't so much slide into the intruder's mind as shove into their thoughts and seize control. She, yes, she, had no protection against him. He knew everything about her instantly. She was originally from the islands dotting the seas. She'd come through the Sapphire port city looking for work, and to avoid a sizable debt she left behind. The tavern by the wharf she chose to hang in was where she heard about the first offer. A lot of fluff, the slang for the drug made from toxic dust, in return for Rourke's death.
a bounty on the upstart marshland rat who called himself king, enough to pay off those she owed. Leandra, who remained frozen as he sorted through her memories, wasn't the first one to think it would be so easy to kill him. They all learned a harsh lesson. More chilling than the prize on his head was the second bounty she'd learned of, the one demanding the capture of his daughter, the princess. An even poorer decision than coming after Rourke himself, no one threatened his daughter. Rourke glanced at Charlotte, his little girl, who'd just barely survived a bout of the marsh sickness, who was the sum of his existence, the thing he loved most in this world, and that woman thought she could take her?
"Some people just never learn. You should have paid attention to the rumors about me," Rourke murmured as he snared his little Charlie from the kidnapper's arms.
The would-be abductor didn't stop him. She couldn't. With only the slightest effort, Rourke held tightly to Leandra's mind and wasn't about to let go until he got every single answer he wanted, and then some.
"Don't move. We're not done," he warned. "We're going to have a chat, you and I, right after I tuck Charlie in."
He set his daughter gently in her bed, pulled the covers over her, and snuggled them around her body to keep her warm. He kissed her forehead. She didn't stir. Because she'd been drugged with Leandra's sleeping power. His daughter attacked in his castle, his fortress, his sweet baby girl almost kidnapped under his nose. It was one thing to go after him. He was a big man. He could handle it. But a child? My child? The rage burned in him, and he wanted to hurt. He crooked a finger at Leandra, whose eyes held a note of panic. "Good." She whimpered as he forced her, stumbling, to follow him. Entering the hall, he sent a mental wake-up to the sleeping guards.
"Do your fucking job!"
The two minds and the bodies thumped on the floor snapped awake.
"Guard the princess! There was an attack!"
As one, their heads turned toward their king with Leandra, an obvious intruder dressed all in black. Even her face was masked. The eyes on the guards widened as they realized she'd been in the princess's suite. Rourke didn't say another word after that. He didn't have to. The security detail tasked with his daughter's protection was mortified. They'd fallen asleep, never mind if they were drugged. They'd failed and took it personally. No punishment could equal their shame, nor the lengths to which they'd work hard to atone. Down the stairs, Rourke strode, still barefoot, but not really feeling the chill in the stone. This time of the year, the humidity had already begun, making everything a little bit warmer and damper. As he headed deeper underground, because prisoners didn't get the cushy rooms in the above-ground levels, it got wetter. Much wetter. Those who inspected the cracks peppering the old tunnels and rooms underneath the castle said they weren't anything to worry about. Then again, they'd said that about the network under the marsh itself, which had collapsed a few months back. It might be time to do something a little more concrete about the problem, because, while Rourke wasn't particularly worried about drowning, not everyone had his gifts. It took a few flights of stairs and more than a couple locked doors before he reached the chamber he liked to use for these kinds of special situations. He stopped in front of a plain metal door with no window. He didn't need to look to feel the fear from the woman at his back. The fear gave him grim satisfaction. She'd attacked his daughter. The rage inside him bubbled, but he held it in a tight ball. Leandra better hope he didn't lose his grasp on that anger, or it wouldn't bode well for her. The room he marched her into didn't have chains or whips, no manacles or drying bloodstains on the floor, which tended to surprise prisoners when they first entered. The only object? A chair. It was all he needed.
"Sit."
He didn't make it a mental command. On the contrary, he'd released her mind for the moment. When she didn't listen, he reached and ripped the hood from her head. She glared at him, a woman past her prime and looking it, mostly because she'd not cared for herself. Debauchery tended to age a person, as did consistently making the wrong choices in life.
"You really don't want to test me, Leandra."
He liked using her name because she winced each time.
"Go ahead, hit me, swamp rat."
She spat it as an insult, and yet where he came from remained a badge of honor with him. He wasn't ashamed of his roots.
"Hit you?" he laughed. "Perhaps in the islands, the big prey on the weak, but not here."
"I am not weak. You are pathetic."
The insult hit Leandra hard, mostly because, deep down, she thought it to be the truth.
"Play the big king all you want. You're a walking dead man. Assassins are coming for you."
"Apparently, and they'll suffer the same fate as those who came before. But you didn't come here to kill me." You were hired to go after my daughter. Tell me who sent you.
He pushed at her mind, but came up against a shield around that information. Just more proof of the plotting against him.
No one. Maybe you're a liar who has forgotten what I can do.
He teased his darkness over the edges of her mind. She trembled, fear widening her eyes.
The rumors are true. You're a demon.
Demon, is it?
He glanced down at himself.
Looks pretty human to me.
A real man wouldn't torture a woman half his size.
Such exaggeration. Really, Leandra, and here I haven't done a thing to you. Not because I don't want to, I should add. You crossed a line.
I wasn't going to hurt her, Leandra exclaimed.
The fact is, you laid hands on my daughter, and I'm not the only one who won't be happy about it. The princess is well-loved, especially by her personal guard, whom you also put to sleep. Anita is quite angry with you.
He crossed his arms. You'll be meeting her in just a moment. He'd sent Anita a mental poke on his way down to the tunnels, felt the anger in her mind at having been duped. One of his most loyal soldiers, Anita arrived with her expression grim and wearing black. It showed fewer stains.
Your Majesty.
Anita didn't bow, but she spoke with deference as she entered the chamber and circled to the prisoner's left. Leandra didn't know who to watch, as if she'd see his attack coming if he chose to go after her.
I take it she's the reason half the castle guard was sleeping on duty.
Yes.
Who is she?
Anita asked, completing her circuit.
Port scum, looking to collect on a bounty.
Another assassination attempt?
Anita cocked her head, her springy hair not caught back in its usual tight bun.
Not this time. Leandra went after the princess.
That drew Anita's hardened gaze.
You attacked a little girl? I never hurt her, Leandra hotly retorted.
But you planned to. You were going to take her away from her home, her family, Rourke said softly. The cruelty of it stuns even my jaded heart.
Attacking little girls is wrong, Anita stepped closer, and he knew this was personal for her,
that it brought back dark memories.
Then punish me like you punish the others who disobey. Put me in your arena to fight for my justice.
Leandra was apparently passingly familiar with some of their customs.
You think you'll get a chance in the arena? He chuckled. Dear Leandra, that's only used for regular crimes. You acted against me, made it personal, and I take that kind of assault very seriously.
Now Leandra appeared worried.
I've told you everything I know.
You have, he didn't disagree.
Whoever hired her had hidden their traces in the more obvious layers of her memories.
Then what else do you want?
To see you suffer, Anita replied. Knowing she didn't need permission, she snapped a fist, slamming it into Leandra's face. Her head rocked. She glared defiantly despite the swelling of her lip.
So much for the justice you vaunted for.
If you wanted justice, you shouldn't have come after my daughter.
Rourke's voice was deadly quiet.
Sit your ass in the chair, Anita pointed.
Make me,
Leandra spat. With pleasure, Anita growled, making it unnecessary for him to act. Anita might have been a bit rough in her handling of the prisoner. Anita wasn't happy. Not because she'd been drugged, but because she was soft on the little princess. Everyone who met her was, especially her father. Once Leandra was seated and tied to the chair, he gazed coldly on her.
Tell me everything.
The spittle showed defiance that barely hid the fear.
Fuck you.
Wrong answer.
By the time Rourke left the room, Leandra wasn't the same woman who'd walked in, and he knew nothing more. A deeper dive into her head showed she'd truly come here based on a rumor circulating in a tavern in the port. Kidnap his daughter or bring his head. The surprising part was Charlie appeared to be worth more. Anita, who'd stood silent while he sifted the woman's mind, snapped to attention when he stepped back from the bowed head of the captive.
You know what to do with her.
Yes, Your Highness. Rourke left Anita to it, exiting the room to see his captain of the guard waiting for him.
You didn't need to come.
Titan, a man with a metal arm and leg and a serious mien, pushed off the tunnel wall.
You should have sent someone to my house the moment you knew something was wrong. I needed to act quickly. Did you find anything out?
He asked. Rourke shook his head, trying to pretend his temples weren't pulsing. He'd exerted a little too much effort.
Just more gossip and rumor. She knows even less than the last one who infiltrated the castle. Surely someone knows who's seeding the bounty rumors, Titan grumbled. After all, if they do the deed, someone will have to pay. It could be proof of success is required before the next set of instructions is delivered.
Rourke shrugged, doing his best to swallow a yawn.
In the meantime, we need to do something about Charlotte's protection. Anita can't be with her all the time. She needs help.
Titan grimaced.
I can't believe none of the guards noticed a thing. I'm going to send them out in the marshes to patrol. Maybe spending their nights with stuff that can eat them will make them sleep more lightly. Not entirely their fault. They were drugged,
Rourke said as they made their way up the floors to the main level of the castle, each step in agony to his throbbing head, because it reminded him how many more he had to go.
I don't give a fuck if they were drugged. The fact it happened at all means we need better detection. We can't be taken so easily unaware.
Not so easily, Rourke had stepped in and managed to avert disaster.
What if you hadn't woken?
Titan's low words were a grim reminder. Rourke would prefer not to think on that, just like he hoped to get a few hours' sleep before the next disaster struck.
We need motion detection cameras tied to an alarm. You know they only work half the time.
The fate of most electronics in the marshlands.
The ones Riella make never fail.
The advantages of having a metallurgist scion and former enclave princess working for him.
She's busy working on connecting the hamlets to the city. This takes precedence.
Rourke slashed his hand through the air, hoping Titan didn't see the tremor.
Charlotte is to be protected.
He'd never forgive himself if something happened. As Rourke stalked back in the direction of his room, Titan followed.
Was there something else you needed? The king snapped. Just making sure you're not attacked.
He paused and eyed Titan. His new captain of the guard had been tightening down on his freedom since the first pathetic attempt on his life.
I can protect myself. Can you right now? Because I'm pretty sure I could take you one-handed. And I mean with my flesh hand. You've been pushing yourself too hard lately.
Because I have to.
Never said you didn't. But that does mean you're a tad more vulnerable right now.
Rourke glared.
I don't need protection for myself. Just Charlotte. You're just as important. Are you defying me, Tin Man?
The name Titan used to wear when he was fighting in the arena as the king's champion. A strange twist of fate had brought him to Rourke.
If you wanted people who always agreed with you, you'd have never asked me to work for you.
Rourke glowered.
You could agree some of the time. When you make sense, right now you're letting panic make your decisions.
Not panic, fatherly concern. An intense disquiet about the safety of the one person he loved most in this world.
My life won't be worth a thing if something happens to her, he admitted softly. And if you're the one killed first, what do you think happens then?
Titan arched a brow.
Bossy fucker. Do what you think is best, Rourke growled, so long as it doesn't get in my way. On it!
Titan veered off, and Rourke spent a moment watching the man, wondering what fresh security hell he'd suggest next. He stomped toward his tower, almost tripping twice on Sachi along the way. For a cat whose agility stunned, she could be obsessively annoying on stairs, darting between the legs to unbalance. He knew she did it on purpose, mangy feline. Sachi tried to distract him from what he'd done to the woman downstairs. Just another memory he'd live with of the things he did to keep those he loved safe. Chapter 2 The thing she did for those she loved. Casey missed the days when she and her gang were trying to stay alive in the Ajitari forest, when it was humans against everything, where she felt alive, even if she worried she'd get eaten in her sleep. However, they'd left the woods and its dangers because the displaced crew of almost 50 was offered a place to call home. The abandoned village that Haven had settled into was actually fairly nice once you looked past the neglect and the recent fire. Even nicer once it got cleaned up. Safe, too. Almost a month here and Casey was bored to tears. Repairing roofs and learning how to build boats for sailing the river wasn't exactly her idea of productive use of her time. Food proved to be plentiful, with the fish in the river providing meat and the trees that survived abandonment, and fire ripe with fruit. The grass outside the village contained edible bulbs easily dug up. What was a hunter and accomplished marauder, such as herself, supposed to do? She knew what she wanted to do. Leave. She wanted to explore parts unknown. Apparently, there wasn't a severe restriction on travel in these parts. The marshland city and seat of power, a place known as Eden, welcomed travelers. Even Port City in the opposite direction beckoned her with curious fingers. But that would mean leaving. How could she abandon the friends and family she loved to go elsewhere? What if they needed her to fight? Then again, she wouldn't be much use if her skills got rusty from soft living. Perhaps she should ask Axel if he needed any messages delivered in person. Eden was only a few days' travel, and the ocean only a day's ride. What if she left, though, and never wanted to come back? She stalked out of the civilized parts of Haven, noticing the difference since their arrival. The crushed rock streets were swept clean, and the stone block houses sported proper roofs. The trees overhanging the docks by the water had been trimmed for better visibility. New wood showed where it had replaced the rotted gaps on the pier. A few vessels bobbed by its side. While soot, from a fire Gunnar claimed was set by a sorceress, still stained some of the homes, the refugees from Hilltop Haven didn't care. They finally had a place to call their own. Except for Casey. She had to share with Cam because her twin, who looked nothing like her, no matter how hard people squinted, insisted she not live alone. Why not? She loved her brother, but she was getting older and wanted her own space. From him, at least. Cam needed to move on and do his own thing without her. Yet telling him that he needed to find a new partner would only hurt the brother who loved her, who'd spent his life looking after Casey. Why did he have to be a nice guy? She hated nice guys. She stalked along the shore of the river that meandered toward the Ajitari Forest a few days' hard ride from here. It formed part of the border between the Emerald and Sapphire Kingdoms. It was a hairy trip through those woods, and then across the ravine. But how could they resist when offered a place to call their own by the self-appointed Marshland King? What kind of ego did you need to give yourself such a lofty title? She still recalled their time in the woods, hiding from the Enclave patrols out to exterminate them. The trees themselves almost as dangerous. The trek through the forest, once Gunnar found them and told them of a place they could settle, took longer than she had the patience for. She'd let others herd the slower-moving members while she ranged ahead. The massive tree fallen over the crevice seemed a little too fortuitous to her, the chasm below rife with danger. They crossed it, moving quickly, and not stopping until they were far away from that crack that led to the bowels of the planet and its fiercest denizens. She'd wrangled with ghouls a time or two. She had the scars to prove it, and didn't recommend it. The village the Marsh King gave them, because apparently he thought they needed permission to take over an empty place, seemed relatively safe. Almost a month here, and the worst danger they'd dealt with came from the river monster with snapping teeth. The monster, named Big Crunchy by Little Kylie, was killed, and people now sported boots made of its skin. The meat tasted great in stew, and its teeth were perfect for making buttons, arrowheads, and even utensils. The excitement and usefulness of Big Crunchy spawned hunters in Haven, who went actively seeking another. Casey was after bigger game, something that offered a bit of a challenge, hence why she often roamed alone, or tried to. She made it to the rotted pier by the first bend in the river, hidden almost entirely in reeds, before she heard him.
Casey! Her brother never could wait to get close enough to talk in a normal voice. He always had to bellow. She whirled and yelled right back. What? Titan's here. He wants to talk to you.
The Tin Man himself. She walked toward Cam. What's he want? Ever since Titan lost his limbs, he'd been different. He'd also gotten hitched to some princess and taken to living in Eden. More pretension, as the name alluded to the ancient garden of the gods. Gods. Ha. Huh. More like tall tales for the gullible. Casey didn't believe in a higher power, nor kings. She'd made the vow a long time ago to always make her own choices. Luckily for Axel, Haven's current leader, his decisions aligned with her own.
He wouldn't say why he wants you, just that it was important.
Are you sure he didn't mean to say he thought he was important? Given Titan worked for the king, they rarely saw him. But they'd heard of his exploits, which her jealousy hoped were exaggerated. Apparently he'd had a hand in the Emerald Queen's demise. It caused much rejoicing, given the hardship they'd suffered under her reign. Sometimes she wondered what was happening back in the Old Kingdom. Then she gave herself a shake. The wasteland couldn't compare to the lushness this side of the forest. The freedom was nice, too, even if it came with boredom. Entering the village, she noticed more than a few new faces. It seemed other people had come to join their outpost on the edge of the marshes. Some were previous inhabitants who fled after the attack that led to the emptying of this place. Others were wanderers looking for a home. Haven didn't turn folk away until they'd had a chance to prove themselves. If a person had something useful to offer, even if it was just minding the little ones, they could stay. Harm the group? Well, let's just say Haven didn't set those miscreants packing into the world for someone else to deal with. They handled it, just like that supposed Marsh King did. She heard he had a
Sample complete. Ready to continue?